consecutive time in the last six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Well, hello there. Welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast. I'm Adrian Eames and James O'Toole is with us from his abode. James, I reckon I can't start any podcast these days without asking about your house. How is it? How's it coming along?
it's getting there, Adrian. Been a bit busy over the weekend trying to get things in place, in fairness to our builders. They're straight on the case this morning and started doing walls and stuff. So we're getting there now. We are getting there.
Yeah, it must be a great sense of relief.
It is and it isn't, because of course, as we're talking about this not being football, not being the end of the world, either is getting this done being the end of the world, to tell you the truth. People are in worse situations than us. But sure. I'd say we're a good 10 weeks away from an actual kitchen going into this house at the moment. So we're still living off a lot of microwavable dinners, let's say.
Yeah, very nutritional.
Very nutritional. Every nutritionist has it on their list.
Okay, let's get down to business. Football back at the weekend. The Bundesliga resuming after an absence of several weeks. Mixed views, of course. Great to see football back, James, but very surreal as well.
Yeah, it is kind of surreal. But listen, it's something that some of us will know a lot about, because any of us who watch first division games will know that there's not a lot of people at them either. So, yeah, it was a bit surreal to see no crowds, no atmosphere. And, of course, young Mr. Haaland got a bit of stick over his interview after his match the other day, which I think was a bit unfair, to tell you the truth.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out and the lessons that will be learned. We'll be chatting with Mark Langdon from the Racing Post about the return of the Bundesliga at the weekend. And also Celtic being crowned champions, 9 titles in a row, crowned champions, and Hearts relegated from the Scottish Premiership. Coming up, we'll chat to Mark. That's in due course. But first, where are we at in this country in terms of a return to football? Well, we're on phase one of the government roadmap as society once again opens up. The FEI, including Medical Director Alan Byrne, are in contact regularly with the various government agencies. The upshot of the statement released at the weekend by the FAI in terms of this roadmap for football: Dundalk, Shamrock Rovers, Derry City and Bowes poised to play in a 4-team tournament. That's the plan being mooted. That tournament would then act as a pilot scheme for a return to football and, of course, European competition preparation for those 4 clubs mentioned. Players and staff from those 4 clubs will be invited to undergo regular COVID-19 testing, that from the end of the month, May 26th, and those clubs can return to collective training on the 8th of June. For the rest of the clubs, well, they can return to collective training on June 29th with regular testing for players and staff. And the FEI medical team will provide a detailed and transparent analysis of testing results. Where we're joined on the RT Soccer Podcast by Derry City Director Sean Barrett and also by the St. Patrick's Athletic goalkeeper Brendan Clark. Sean, we'll come on to Derry's support for the All-Ireland League. We'll touch on that very shortly. But can we just start with the League of Ireland, where things are at the moment? How do you see things at the moment in terms of a return to football in this country?
Well, like anybody, I'm sure the whole way over, we were watching yesterday the Bundesliga, Saturday and Sunday. They watched that to see how that progressed. We're very keen to get back. I think society would love to get football back. We've spoke to the players. The players would all like to come back, obviously, in a safe environment. And if we make sure everything's 100% safe, which is the guarantees are starting to get a bit bigger here now, that would be great. I mean, we're very much keen to get back playing football and watching football. Albeit even behind closed doors, whatever it may be, our mantle has always been as let's get playing football again, you know, obviously if it's safe for everybody and the environment to do so.
Brendan, I'm sure you're desperately keen to get back, because obviously the St. Pat's players were temporarily laid off last month. So how difficult for you has it been without football for the last couple of weeks, and obviously having been temporarily laid off and having to cope with all of that and the stress I'm sure that brings?
Yeah, look, I mean, personally, I've been a footballer as a professional for so long, so it's kind of what I know, you know. We've just gone through a pretty tough pre-season, and things were starting to click for us on the pitch, and for this to come and, you know, have the whole league suspended, kind of, you know, it's really disappointing. But it's totally understandable from a health and safety point of view. So, you know, as I can only kind of speak for myself, so I would have been looking at Germany yesterday, and and being really envious of players back playing football. And because, you know, as players, we have a professional pride that, you know, we want to work. You know, for us, this is our job, and we want to get out and work. And it's obviously a privileged job, and it's a short career. So we as players, we'd want to get back and playing as soon as possible, so long as it's safe to do so, you know.
And I guess, Sean, that's the key thing, as long as it is safe to do so. Are you happy that the structures can be put in place in perhaps in hubs around the country for football to resume, and that the testing of players will be adequate?
Yeah, well, I hope so. Obviously, 100%, if it's not fit to do it, there's no way a Derry City player or indeed any club should have, unless it's 100%. But yeah, I think from what I'm hearing now, I haven't heard enough, to be honest with you. I need to hear a lot more. In fact, there's probably a lot more questions than answers at this moment in time. But so we haven't got all the bones, for want of a better word. But effectively, I don't see why not. I don't see why. I mean, I pass test stations. I'm actually one of the lucky ones that actually is working, because we're in essential services. But I mean, I pass with the testing thing that they do here every day, and they're doing tests there for the people in the NHS and stuff like that. So there's no reason why the FBI or whoever's going to be doing it will do the same thing. Absolutely.
And obviously, it's a costly issue, though, all the same, for various clubs around the country. The FAI would have to be, you know, footing the bill. And I think in the plans that perhaps Niall Quinn has, that's part of the thinking, that the money that would be forthcoming, perhaps, from UEFA to help part fund it. But, you know, the cost of testing, it's quite expensive.
Oh, I don't know what the cost is. I would assume you're quite right. It is quite expensive. But, I mean, it's essential if we're going to start back. And if it doesn't happen, then the leagues won't happen, or we certainly wouldn't, you know. But I think that they're happy with what they're saying, and we're happy if that's what they're coming up with. We get our players tested regularly and in the correct environment, then let's go for it.
And Sean, where do you, like, if there is to be testing, do you reckon that's at a training centre? Is it in the Brandywell, or is there anything put in place there for the players?
Well, the beauty about us at the moment is that we've got our own gym and our own facilities there, you know, toilet chair facilities, all that are all there. So we have an enclosed area for just use of our players and our staff only. So from that point of view, and I'm sure all our clubs are the same, by the way, that would be the environment of which we could do. Do we have to go somewhere? I mean, that would, you know, add adds to the risk. So I would assume it'll be in our own hub, you know, and they'll come in there, do whatever test needs done. I don't see any reason. And as I say, we're starting to do collective training from June now anyway. So the guys come in, do whatever test needs done, and hopefully everybody tests will be okay, and then take it from that. You know, I don't think, you know, I know you're saying it's going to be very, very expensive, but look, it's getting rolled out throughout the country, North and Ireland, Southern Ireland, and the rest of the UK. So, you know, look, it's something that is manageable. Obviously, they'll be learning from what's happening throughout the country, and I think it could be achievable.
Brendan, any misgivings on your part about, you know, the risks involved in all of this? Because obviously there was a PFAI survey, 285 members were canvassed about returning to football, 87% in favour. And obviously then there's the 13% that are perhaps understandably worried because they may have a family member who has an underlying condition. But would you have any misgivings about a return to football? But I guess you're going to tell me once everything is safe, you don't.
No, I mean, it's like you said, 87% of the lads that were surveyed kind of are in favour of going back to training. And obviously the 13% kind of might have underlying health conditions, or like are living with an older family member and stuff like that. And that's totally understandable that, you know, you are increasing a risk in going out and training and mixing with players. But if we can get tested regularly and if we can catch any positive stuff early, well then hopefully it's viable to do, you know.
Sean, we mentioned there the proposed four-team tournament for the four clubs bound for Europe. Are you happy with that arrangement, with that proposal, to be part of that?
Yeah, I think it's... Yeah, of course we are. Of course we are. Again, it's back to the players wanting to play football again. I'm sure Brent would like to be involved in it as well. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a good idea. I think the concept of let's try this out. If they are going to go to regionalise the football later on or play in certain grounds throughout Ireland, which they're talking about now, I mean, this is a good example to get it started. You have it in a controlled area, whether it be Tawa, whether it be Aviva, or wherever it may be, the controlled environment, and it'll be a good template to see how things go. So I think it's great. I think it'd be a great idea. Now, I don't know much about it yet. Like yourselves, we've just asked Amy, we'll be interested in getting involved. But I do think it's a good concept. And actually, I spoke to James the other day. I remember we actually played one of those before, but it was a round robin competition. It was called the Carisbrook Cup way back in the day. We won the league. And then the three R clubs, and it wasn't Aviva, it was Lansdowne Road, but it was a super tournament, you know, really, really good. And we'd be playing, obviously, Bohemians, Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers would be great for all four clubs, I think. And it's good for all the R clubs to have a look at and see how things are being done and how they will be done. I'm sure all the R clubs will be invited, some represent us, they monitor the situation and see how they're going to adapt and do this. So, absolutely, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, Brendan, because some fans looking at it are saying, well, those four clubs, the clubs bound for Europe, they're getting a leg up here from the FAI in that they're being allowed to return to training much earlier than the rest of the teams. But I guess from an FAI perspective, they're looking at this scenario and saying, look, we have to ease our way back to football. And this perhaps is a way of just testing the structures and the protocols to make sure everything is right before, hopefully, football can resume. Is that how you'd see it?
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, obviously, Sean's bang on. I'd love to be playing in this 14th tournament. You know, I can see the thought process behind it from the FAI in terms of piloting the scheme and kind of fixing any minor issues or anything that might crop up and stuff like that. And also, you know, I can see why other clubs might be frustrated at the idea of it, kind of given that the four teams will be back training kind of 3 weeks ahead of everyone else, if you get me. So they've had a longer run into a potential kind of season restart. But look, as a player, I mean, I can't affect any decisions really that have been made. So you kind of just get on with it and, you know, look on enviously as the lads are back to training, and I'm sure it'll be all over social media, pictures and videos and stuff again like that. So, you know, it's just something kind of we'd have to get on with.
And Brendan, have the PFA been on to you guys about if there is to be hubs? Do you guys get a decision on, well, this ground here is the best one or that one's the best one? Has any discussions happened with players? Because obviously you guys are the ones that have to go out and play. You have to go into change rooms, which are probably too small to hold the whole team at the best of times, never mind you're in social distancing. So have you guys been asked about it at all?
Well, I thought the one thing that the PFAI have done, the communication has been incredible. We've had weekly kind of Zoom calls with Steve and Ollie Simone from the office, with all the delegates from each club, so we've been kept in the loop on everything, so then each delegate can pass on information to their relevant squads or whatever. So in terms of making a decision, I don't know. I'm sure we'll be asked opinions and stuff, but you know, it won't be. I don't think it'll be down to the players to make decisions. But you know, everything's been open and transparent so far, and we've had an input, and any questions that players have raised have gone to various steering groups, or I'm not sure, there seems to be a group for everything nowadays. But our questions have gone to the relevant parties, and we've got kind of answers to questions, you know.
And Sean, can I just ask you, because we touched on hubs there. I mean, the Brandywell was one of the hubs being spoken about, or a potential hub for football matches to be played, perhaps for clubs in the Northwest. And as Declan Devine mooted last week, maybe involving the likes of Dundalk maybe and Drogheda United if they were to go down that route. Is that still your reading of the situation, that the Brandywell is being considered as a potential hub?
No, I don't think it's going to be considered now. I mean, I think it's a perfect location and it's got a new ground, new changing rooms, wider spacious areas and stuff. But I don't think, it's a fluid situation. Things change on a daily basis. I mean, I was under the impression that one of the grounds was Athlone, and now I'm here in Sligo and Galway. So I don't know. It's a fluid situation, but I don't think it's being considered at this moment in time, anyway. But I think it would be a good location, from the fact that it's a modern stadium now, and the facilities are a lot better than some of the other stadiums. But and the actual pitch as well. I don't know whether that's a factor or not. I just don't know. But no, I don't think it's been considered, as a short answer.
And what do you think are the governing issues around deciding where the hubs would be? Is it location, like geography? Obviously, there's probably a whole range of factors involved in whatever decision is arrived at.
I was going to say that's probably what it is. It's a whole range of them. You know, location's obviously one, and then the facilities there within those stadiums, the changing facilities, and maybe the areas for testing, and all those are all, there's so many of those factors to be taken into consideration, I would have thought, you know, but I really don't know. I wouldn't be privy to who's making those calls or what the decisions are, but as I say, they have been changing, so they've obviously been looking at certain options and then going back to other things, you know.
But that must be disappointing from a Derry City perspective if the Brandywell is ruled out.
Well, again, I'm only going by speculation and I don't really know, but I mean, my understanding is that the home, you don't play your home games anyway. You know what I mean? You're not allowed to play. For example, if it's going to be Sligo Rovers, I think Sligo Rovers have to play their games in Galway. So, do you know, from a Derry City point of view, personal point of view, I don't think it would matter to us as a club, but I would just like to see it as a good showcase for the League of Ireland, because it is friendly, and even if there's nobody at the games, it's a good modern stadium, which will do enhance, if it is going to be streaming, it would enhance the game for us here, and looks a lot better, you know. That's all. But from a club's point of view, it won't make a difference, because I think we'll have to play away from home anyway. It'd be unfair to have your home advantage. Again, I apologise for saying this, but it's such a fluid situation. I don't know.
And Brendan, from your point of view, Talla obviously would be the one who'd look in Dublin, because it's, as I said, it's got big changing rooms and stuff like that. But again, Pats would have to, if that was the situation, have to play their home games away somewhere. Well, they're playing Talla, but where would Rovers play then? Do you know what I mean? If they were going to look for big crowds and stuff like that back into games, or even if starting to bring crowds back, Talla is obviously the obvious place for it, because it's wide open spaces.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's probably the most modern of League of Ireland grounds in the Dublin area, isn't it? It's big, it's open, and, you know, the pitch is fantastic up there. Obviously, for a Pats team to play home games in Talla would be a bitter pill to swallow for a lot of our supporters, you know. We've done it in the past in Europe and stuff like that, and but it's one of these things that if that's what we have to do to get back playing, well then, I mean, as players, yeah, like we're on board with doing that. Obviously, the club will have I don't know now, different kind of opinions on terms of they might have sponsorships and to reorganise and stuff. But speaking from a player's point of view, you know, we'd just be kind of hoping to get back training and get back working. But if that turns out to be Talla as the selected venue, well, you know, that's what we have to do.
And Sean, as you mentioned, obviously an awful lot of this has to be teased out, and there's all sorts of speculation, as you say. But in terms of playing football behind closed doors for the various clubs right around the country, if they go to, you know, four central hubs and they stream matches from there, do you think that's going to be financially viable? Because I know they'll have to come up with a package and an arrangement that helps clubs financially. But do you think the return on that kind of investment is likely to be there?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? And of course, it wouldn't be financially viable to go to those grounds. You know, of course, it wouldn't be viable to go to those grounds. In fact, a few years back, we played a European game. Actually, we had it playing Sligo because the Brandywell was getting done up, and we struggled in the first leg, shall we say, and we had basically nobody at the game. So from a financial point of view, of course, it is. They're looking at a package. They're looking at different things to keep the football going, even in a shorter term, I think. You know, people are saying, well, the whole season. My hope would be we could get back for a few matches behind closed doors and then bring on the capacity up to 25% to 50%, which would help significantly, you know. So, I mean, that's why people keep thinking, oh, he's wiping out the season. If we can look positively and say, look, you know, come September, October, we're going to be able to play behind 50% of the stadium holds, you know, that type of thing would be able to help some of that finance, regain some of that finance back, you know. You'd be able to get sponsors again. You'd be able to get, you know, I do think of any type of football now, it would be great to see it, but absolutely right. You know, financially, it's not going to work unless they get some funding, 100%.
Yeah, Brendan, what's your view on streaming and potential income for clubs? Because let's face it, as it stands, the League of Ireland, it's quite a small market, so it's going to be very difficult to recoup the kind of investment that would need to be made.
Absolutely, and obviously, you know, it would have to work for clubs, because we don't want clubs going to the wall over this, you know. There's been too many that have gone out of existence in the last number of years, so, you know, to lose any more, that's not what we want. But, you know, obviously it would have to work from a financial point of view for clubs, and I mean, as players, we understand that.
And James, actually, we were chatting before we started the podcast, and you were saying that you were a bit disappointed with the figures from Germany at the weekend in terms of those watching. I know that it had a worldwide audience, that the Bundesliga at the weekend, of something like 1 billion, and obviously Dortmund on Saturday was the big game, and Bayern on Sunday, both winning, so no change at the top of the Bundesliga. But you were saying that in Germany, the figures perhaps weren't as hectic as you'd have hoped for, or you'd have thought.
No, I thought, like, with Sky Deutschland obviously put out their figures on Saturday for the Saturday game, and it was 7 million views. And I know a lot of people say, wow, 7 million people watched that game, but I thought that was actually quite low, considering it's the first really big league to get back playing. Everybody wants to watch live sport. No fans were in the stadium, so I thought it would actually be bigger than that. And it kind of put a little bit of worry in my head as to this streaming in the League of Ireland, and whether or not it would work if that's the kind of viewership they got in Germany for what was essentially a very big game as well. Like, so worrying, I thought.
So I think the whole kind of pandemic has kind of shone a light on how fragile our league is in terms of, you know, a TV deal and stuff like that. Like, I mean, 50% of the clubs, 50% of the players that we have in the league on professional contracts are now on COVID scheme payments. Like, obviously, there's not a lot of positive to come from this because of the difficulties that clubs are facing, but it should kind of shine a light on how fragile our league is, and hopefully that, you know, people in charge can realise how what we need as a league to grow and to prosper, you know,
and to resource it properly. And on that, Sean, Derry City issued that statement last week about the All Ireland League. Very much in favour. You might just outline the thinking of the club on the matter.
Well, just exactly what Brenton's just said there, but it shows how fragile the league is. The words you used there was 100% correct. Sadly, it is very fragile. We have seen clubs go into the wall. The bottom line is what's happening now, it's just not working. It hasn't worked for years and it's not working. And it's time for a change. A radical change is what we're feeling, and we think it should happen. Now, you know, there's a lot of stuff has to be done in the background, but we just seen, you know, I spoke to Kieran Lucid on several occasions. I met him actually at Windsor Park a few months back. They done a presentation days on Monday night when all of us, you know, we were able to all zoom in on a call, and myself and the chairman and a few of the board members all sat in. And they just need for him, Philip, our chairman, hadn't seen the presentation before. And, you know, this is they're looking about things changing now. They're on about what they can do about this and that. And I think this is a great opportunity for the whole league. I mean, you know, I know people saying, oh, geographically it's great for you. Yes, it is great for us, but it's great for the league as well. I mean, last year we played Dundalk 6 times. Now, you don't want to play Dundalk more than once a year, to be honest, the way they are at the moment. But, I mean, but, like, you know, my point is that you're playing everybody 4 or 5 times. Here you have an opportunity of playing different opposition, trying to raise the profile of the game. There's some decent stadiums up there. Like, we were in Windsor Park. It's an our super stadium. It's an all where every single footballer in Ireland would want to play in, as they love playing in the Aviva, all those are the Tala, all those stadiums. So there's so much that we see that could be changed, that could be different. If we go down this route. And the reason we've done it this week is because of the fact that we had the meeting this week and the fact that there's all about changes in the League of Ireland. They want to do this. What's the best way forward? And we think that's the best way forward.
And Sean, obviously, Derry City would obviously be a cornerstone of this plan with the history with the Irish League as well. So I'm taking it that the group has obviously been over the moon. The club have come out in such a positive fashion.
Yep. Well, we've been chatting. It actually went quite well. I mean, we actually monitored it on the media sites and it actually came down very positively throughout everywhere, which is good. Like, I just think, I mean, everybody that I spoke to, with the exception of one or two, are very, very keen for something like this to happen. Certainly the concept, the original concept of, you know, the two leagues playing together and then joining together and playing all in the league, I think it'd be good. And I'm sure I'd love to hear Brendan's view on it. But I'm sure every footballer would want to do that. I'm sure Brenton said to tie the cups and different things, and you want to play different opposition. Maybe you could answer that for me, could you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm around long enough to remember the start of the Satanta Cup and the whole positivity around that and the crowds that came down from the north to our games and stuff when we played in Dublin, you know, and it did create a totally different atmosphere to league games, you know. So, I mean, I'd love to see something different. That's my personal view. I'd love to see something tried, and if clubs can come together and agree on a way forward. And I know there's issues around European places and how that would work. And from a personal point of view, like I'd love to experience playing in Windsor, and I've played up in Portadown and Glentoran and big, you know, in front of big crowds up there. So I'd be for trying something, but that's just my own kind of personal view.
Well, there's three or four options, Brendan, and one of the options is the one that is preferred option is option four, and that's basically where we play each other home and away in our own leagues, and that determines where you are in Europe. So whoever wins those, you keep your European slots, both north and south, and then after the two set of games, then we play in an all-island concept, which is the top six clubs from each play each other, and the bottom six play each other, and they regionalise at the bottom section. So, you know, you've got a best of both worlds, is my feeling on this, you know. So that's what they're muting, and that's what we'd be very keen on, you know. But to see how it goes.
It sounds like a decent plan, and it sounds like it could work from the club's point of view. Would everyone be on board with that? I don't know. But, you know, it's just kind of wait and see, I suppose.
Yeah, that perhaps is one of the questions, isn't it, Sean? Because there's a feeling out there that perhaps some of the Irish League clubs in particular, maybe some of the League of Ireland clubs in the South as well, but that some of the Irish League clubs might need to be won over just yet, that their hearts aren't necessarily going in that direction just yet.
Yeah, well, we've spoken to most of them off the record and on the record in different capacities, and you agree, it seems to, at this moment in time, certainly the vast majority of the League of Ireland clubs are very, very keen. Because they all recognise we need to change in some form. And a lot of the Irish League clubs, but you're right, there is still a few that need to be won over, for want of a better word, you know. But look, that's up to the powers that be to try and do that. I know that the FAA and the IFA are meeting regularly. The FAA are very, very keen on it. And they're talking to the IFA on a weekly meeting to try and come up with some conclusion to this. So, look, I don't know where it will happen. I just think it's a great idea, a great concept. And I hope from a football point of view, we need to do something different. And I think that's the best option I've seen in all the times I've been involved, anyway.
And do you think this new FAI with Gary Owens and Niall Quinn and all the various new faces that are involved in Abbottstown, do you think they're looking at this and saying, yeah, that's the way forward, that's a viable project?
Well, Niall Quinn, I was listening to him on the radio the other day, and he came out very clearly and saying that, look, he thinks it's a great idea. Like after we come out with a statement, he says, look, I think it would be a fabulous way forward. I think they're all very keen for an All-Ireland League. You know, I think so, yep, in some capacity, definitely. I mean, there have to be changes. I mean, have to think and look at this now. And again, sadly, this virus has maybe highlighted it more and more, as Brenton says, the fragility, or whatever the word is, of where we're at the moment, and I think it's a great idea to try and change things around.
And Brent, from your point of view, as far as getting back training is concerned, you've obviously been doing stuff by yourself and kicking around and stuff like that. How's it been going? How have you been keeping your mentality going? How's your mental health going?
It's not too bad. I mean, luckily, before the league shut down, I was made kind of head academy goalkeeper coach with the club, so I've been working with the goalkeepers in the underage setup, probably once or twice a week, kind of setting them tasks and kind of liaising with them, and you know, just keeping them interested in kind of goalkeeping and stuff like that, so they're not completely switching off and they're not getting bored just going off doing 5K runs and stuff, because you know goalkeepers, we don't run that far, so it's just trying to keep them enthusiastic and stuff. And you know, for my mental health, that's been brilliant. You know, I'm coming up to the end of my goalkeeping A license now. Hopefully at the end of this month. And you know, one of the questions that they've asked us is how we've kind of adapted to this situation and how we've kept going in terms of educating goalkeepers. So you know, it's been a good break in terms of working with the young goalkeepers, working with the academy goalkeeping coaches and collaborating with other goalkeeping coaches and getting ideas out there and pushing through, you know.
That's one of actually the courses that people don't mention much about is the goalkeeping course. I know there's 5 or 6 years now, isn't there? They're up at that level. Like Dermot O'Neill has obviously got a pro in it. I think Michael Schlingerman has one as well, does he? I think
Yeah, well, I think to coach in the Premier Division now, you need to have your goalkeeping A, your UEFA goalkeeping A license. Going forward, like it's the ideal for me. I know some coaches will have done it in different associations, kind of up north and in Scotland and stuff like that, which would all fall under the UEFA bracket kind of thing. But there's a good few of us now who would be the kind of inverted commas younger generation of coaches coming through who would be on this UEFA A course, and you know, it's been a long hard year of assignments and video and sessions and putting session plans together and periodization and all these words and stuff, and you know, it's been really good, and it's something I'm looking forward to finishing and hopefully getting the certificate in my back pocket.
Okay, well, listen, we leave it there. Brendan Clark, best of luck, and hopefully we'll see you back between the sticks very soon. Also, thanks as well to Sean Barrett, Derry City director. James, you've been a busy boy watching football, but you were particularly struck with something from the K-League in the last few days.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Breaking news this morning. Everybody's done pieces on this. Dan Rowan's even done pieces on this about their mannequins in the stands, which seems to have brought a bit of a laughter bit of laughter amongst the soccer community. In fairness to the K-League, at least, as I said earlier, they're keeping a couple of businesses alive by purchasing the mannequins to be at the matches. So I suppose every little bit helps an economy at this time, doesn't it?
it's a funny one, all right. It's a funny one, all right. Celtic, of course, crowned champions, as we mentioned a little earlier. Mark Langdon of the Racing Post is on the line. Mark, it's probably been coming for a wee while, this, but confirmation that Celtic have made it 9 titles in a row. And of course, as the club said themselves in a statement, not the way they would have wished to be crowned champions for the 9th time in a row. But I guess, as I mentioned there a few moments ago, this has been coming, this decision from the authorities in Scotland, for some time now. They really had very few options on it.
I think that this was just sort of, you know, the final confirmation, wasn't it? We've known this for a while. I think once the sort of 3 leagues below them sort of settled in a similar way, you know, it was always heading for this end result. You know, of course, Rangers have had their say on the matter. I think probably the bigger sort of concern maybe is what happens with Hearts, of course, relegated at the moment, but there's talk that maybe there could be some kind of restructure. But of course, this is not uncommon. I mean, we've seen similar sort of outcomes in different leagues. In France, they have announced relegation and relegated teams. In Holland, they've not relegated teams, and that they got rid of promotion. So we are in sort of, you know, uncharted territory, really, in terms of how to settle leagues. And I don't think there is a perfect way to do it. And I think it really, you just have to do the vote and, you know, majority rules, I think.
Yeah, because Hearts would certainly feel they have a case that they could contest this decision, because financially, and obviously no club wants to be relegated, but actually being in the Premiership in Scotland, financially, with the TV money that goes with it, it's a huge loss for them.
Yeah.
Never mind for the fans.
No, of course, and there's a new TV deal in place that starts, of course, next season. I think that was one of the real sort of pushing factors behind this sort of decision, to try to sort things out. And you wouldn't really want this season carrying on, you know, into what sort of designated time for next year. That was certainly in terms of Belgium, who were the first league to announce that they were, closing up. They're in a similar situation to Scotland, with a new TV deal coming into place for the start of next season. And I think that those leagues that are in that kind of position, very difficult to sort of suggest that you're going to play the remainder of this campaign in August or something like that. And financially, I don't feel like it's a sporting justice necessarily, but financially, these teams You know, sometimes it's better to have the decision and then try to deal with it rather than being the unknown, which is what's happening in the lower leagues in England, and very unsettling for them. And, you know, you just hope that all the teams can come out of this, because that's, I think, one of the real great strengths of British football, just how deep the leagues run. And, you know, it's going to be a big battle, I think, to keep all the teams going, you know, through to whenever sort of normality returns.
We touched on at the very start of this podcast, Mark, about the Bundesliga returning at the weekend. No change at the top, with Bayern winning on Sunday by a couple of goals to nil. A pretty comfortable win, it must be said, against Union Berlin. And of course, Dortmund on Saturday. So many people right around the world were watching Dortmund in action, and they ran a very, very convincing winners in the big derby match against Schalke by 4-0. A lot of people talking about how strange it was watching football behind closed doors with no crowd there. Eerie, surreal, very quiet. Even the players and various managers spoke about how strange it was. What are the great takeaways, do you think, from the weekend? I mean, what will the likes of the Premier League in England have learned or taken from what occurred over the weekend in Germany, do you think?
Well, I think, first of all, that we haven't got the test results yet to sort of see, and hopefully everything's okay with the players, and, you know, that they can carry on. But I think, first of all, it shows it can be done. You know, and it's not the perfect product. It's not the football I don't think that anybody wants to see. But I would still argue it's better than no football at all. And so I think that showing that you can, you know, get it back on the road, albeit in a different way, is one of the takeaways. I think that you definitely need to be wary against injuries. You know, the Bundesliga came back very quickly, you know, and that there were injuries to be had. If you look at somebody like Borussia Dortmund, picked up a couple in the week. Chan and Witzel both missed out on the game because they were, you know, as they returned to training, maybe pushed a little bit too hard. Then you had Reiner as well, who was supposed to be making his first start for Dortmund, got injured in the warm-up. Jadon Sancho wasn't fully fit. So, yeah, I definitely think that the Premier League have been pushing, haven't they, to maybe start a little bit later, because they want the players to get, you know, back to full fitness. And I think that's important, because when you've done sort of nothing for weeks and then you're asked to get back to elite sport, really, really difficult. So that will definitely be one of the takeaways, the injuries. It was interesting to see the five substitutes for the first time. I suspect that there's probably younger players at Premier League teams getting a little bit excited that they could get an opportunity, you know, probably more than they normally would. I think that five substitutions at this time is actually, you know, a really smart move. It links into what I was just talking about there with the injuries. But you're only allowed to make those substitutions in three goes during a match. So it's not like you can bring on a player in the 88th minute, then the 89th, then the 90th, then the 91st, and try and kill the game out. You can still only do it at three times. It's just you have to make double substitutions and stuff like that. So I think that the big takeaways were that it can be done, and, you know, some football in this form is better than no football.
Yeah, and I would take it that the Premier League clubs and the financial backers behind them will be looking, it can be done, which will then make sure that our TV obligation is met, so no funds have to go back to the big TV stations as far as the rights deals are concerned. So I'd say that's playing on their minds as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's definitely the driving force behind why the Bundesliga has come back. The Bundesliga teams have not received their, and the second division teams have not received their final payment for this season, and that final payment wasn't going to be forthcoming unless they fulfilled the obligation of completing the campaign, which is why they were so desperate to get back. And you could argue that you know, it shouldn't be about the money and stuff like that, but it's been explained by teams, you know, Bayern Munich will be okay, that they'd be able to write it out. But if you have a look at teams in the top two divisions in Germany, that it's believed that between a third and a half would go bust if they are unable to secure the last payment of TV money. And I think, you know, that would just mean that German football would collapse. And that's not an option, really, on the table as far as sort of the German football authorities are concerned, which is why they're putting so much effort into testing the players, testing family members of the players, keeping them in quarantine at times. It's a big, big effort, and it's not without its problems, but ultimately it could be the saviour, for German football. And I think the players and club officials can see the bigger picture as to why it's so important to finish this season.
Yeah, and are you confident or optimistic that football will return in England in the coming weeks? Because I know you mentioned there the risks of players returning and picking up injuries. Raheem Sterling over the weekend talking about the need for maybe a 4 to 5 week run-in period of training before resuming football. You've also got other players who've got their own misgivings. Troy Deeney insisting he'll not put his family at risk. Grant Hanley of Norwich has also expressed concern. Nigel Pearson, the Watford manager, talking about the concerns he would have if there's a death related to the Premier League. But do you think we're heading in a direction now where we will have Premier League football before the summer's out?
I'm optimistic that we will. I think that it does depend on a few things. First of all, that as German football over the next couple of weeks returns, that there isn't some big spike in positive tests. And if that is the case, then it becomes very difficult, I think, to persuade anybody to restart. But I would be more optimistic than I was, say, 10 days ago. I think that, the Germans are showing a way that it can be done. But there are other things at play here in terms of the UK government needing to sort out, the testing, for the whole community, and particularly for key workers as well. And Germany have got that relatively under control. So I think that as long as the UK government can do their part, and sort of, then the clubs can make it safe enough for the players to return. And I'd say I'm more optimistic than I was, say, a week or 2 weeks ago, that there could be some kind of Premier League football before the summer.
Okay, and before we wrap things up with you, Mark, a couple of stories in France. Luis Campo leaving Lille, best sporting director around, you say. Tell us about the significance of that.
Well, yeah, I mean, Luis Campos is, I would say, widely regarded as the best sporting director on the continent, really, in terms of European football. It'd be him or Monchi at Sevilla. But Luis Campos was kind of the man that masterminded Monaco, that great young Monaco team that reached the Champions League semi-finals and won Ligue 1 from Paris Saint-Germain. Kylian Mbappe, he discovered him. Bernardo Silva discovered him. Then he went to Lille. He's done it again. He took them to the Champions League on a shoestring budget. He's announced, it's been reported heavily in France, he will be leaving in the summer. Wants a new challenge. He's been linked with three Premier League teams in the past: Manchester United, Newcastle, if the takeover goes through. But perhaps most interestingly of the lot, he's very close friends with Jose Mourinho, the current Tottenham manager. Mourinho, of course, has already taken some of the Lille backroom staff with him when he was appointed as Mauricio Pochettino's replacement. So that's definitely one to watch, I think, in the next couple of months. He'll be a man definitely in demand because as we get to a situation with clubs where they need to be, probably clever in the transfer market, there won't be as much money to spend, being able to find these gems is going to be absolutely paramount. And he's probably the best around at doing it. So whoever gets him, I'd say, will be doing really well. But I think it's probably Tottenham fans at the moment that are most excited about that. But you couldn't rule out Manchester United either, I don't think.
Absolutely. And mentioned there of Tottenham, one of their former managers perhaps could be on the move as well, Andre Villas-Boas. Rumours that he could be about to leave Marseille. What's the story behind that?
Yeah, well, this again, it's sporting director time, really, because Zubizarreta, who was the Marseille sporting director, he's quit, unhappy with the direction the club is heading in terms of ballroom level. And Villas-Boas is closely linked to Zubizarreta. And Villas-Boas has really restored his reputation this season. Marseille finished second in France. They're heading to Champions League. There is some dispute as to whether they'll be able to sort of fight off a European ban, but in sort of sporting terms, they have made it into next season's Champions League. I mean, Villas-Boas' career looked on the ropes when he left Tottenham. He did an okay job in Russia, but I don't think anybody was expecting him to do quite so well at Marseille. He's had to do it without one of his best players, Torovan. He's been injured for most of the season. He's got the best out of Dimitri Payet. Andre Villas-Boas, another one maybe that could be heading back into the kind of European big time, if you like. Marseille, a huge club, but not really been challenging in recent times. He's restored his reputation, and I'll be surprised, actually, if he doesn't get a decent job next sort of season, if he does leave.
All right, listen, we leave it there. Many thanks, as always, Mark Langdon of The Racing Post. James, mind yourself and keep microwaving
for Ireland. Before we go anywhere...
Go on.
We've got to talk about your commentary on Saturday, do we not? A first for League of Ireland football.
Go on.
We have to talk about your virtual... We do, yeah. We have to talk about your virtual commentary on Sligo Rovers' win over Cork City.
Yeah.
That was an interesting one.
Well, I have to say that they played some of their best football in many a year. And they beat Cork 2-0. Yeah, yeah. David Cawley and Jesse Devers with the goals. So, bad night, though, for Neil Fenn, yeah. Poor defender.
Yeah, it was bad,
really poor defender.
Bad night. I did like the fact that Mr. Cawley got himself all dolled up for the occasion as well, sitting in a sitting room. It was quite interesting.
He looked like something from Graham Norton's red chair business.
Yeah, he made just as much sense anyway.
No, it was a good night, and they raised a few quid, and I guess that's the most important thing. Anyway, keep on rocking, James. We'll talk to you next week.
See you next week.
Bye-bye. Bye.